Hello, my name is Harrison Lee. Today is October 24th, 2015. We are here in State College, Pennsylvania, with Oki Lee, who is my grandmother. During this interview, I will be referring to her as Hominy, which is Korean for grandmother. Hi, Hominy, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. So the first thing I want you to tell me about is a little bit about yourself. Tell me about your background.
I was born and raised in Seoul, Korea, capital city of South Korea. And I was the fifth of six children. I and my three brothers and two sisters had a happy childhood, despite my growing up during the occupation of Korea by Japan.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your early life in Korea? What was it like?
My brothers and sisters all had a happy childhood during the occupation of Korea by Japan, of course. So it was happy childhood I had. Yeah.
Do you have any specific memories, things that stood out to you during that time?
Not really. I cannot pinpoint which one. I had a very happy childhood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you describe any sort of routines that you kind of went through? Like, you know, what did you go to school or?
Yeah, I did go to school. This Korean, it's a co-ed school, mm-hmm. but my class was separated by boys. Mm-hmm. So boys and the girls are separated. In class, yeah.
Okay. And where did your parents work?
What did they work? Mm-hmm. No. Actually, my father owned a mining company, but my mother was a housewife. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did your siblings do any work at all, or they went to school mostly?
Mostly school, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then how important was family to your daily routines, say, in comparison to when you came to the U.S.?
Oh, it's very important. It was a very tight relationship among families. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did you stay in contact with them when you came to the U.S.?
Yes, of course. I stayed in contact with my family, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss anything about living in Korea?
Of course, a lot of things I miss. Family first start with. You know. My father passed away when I was living in Korea, but my mother was still living, and then the rest of my siblings was still living, mm-hmm. except my older sister, who was during the Korean War. She was killed by the artillery. They hit the her air raid shelter destroyed. So I lost an elder sister.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the cities and places in Korea like? What were some of the cities and places you lived like?
As I said, I just all my life. To the point that I was growing up there, I never gone live else any other cities. Korea, the Seoul, Korea is the only place I have been, and I never got out of that city. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
except the Korean War. Yeah,
and. Do you remember anything interesting about Seoul? Anything that struck you about it?
Seoul, as I said, you know, till we fled to a southernmost city of Busan, we lived in our house, and it was very peaceful, and they had a little backyard. We had a little, when I was very young, backyard, you had an orchard, like it's not for business purposes, but we had our fruit trees on the backyard, and we were very happy to have those things. So, as I said repeatedly, I was a very happy child at the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you plan on returning to Korea at any time?
Did I plan that?
Do you plan on?
Now? Mm-hmm. No, at this late age, I don't think I will return to Korea to live. Mm-hmm. This is my country now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you went back to visit, where did you go?
Seoul.
Seoul?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what brought you to the United States?
After Korean War, I was a college student, and then after war, all schools were shut down until the government was restored and the country was rebuilt. So many college students were seeking opportunities to go to abroad to study. So I applied to, as I said, I had a good fortune to meet Professor Adams, Miss Adams, who was the director of the student teaching at the university in Illinois, Evanston, Illinois.
And what were you intending to study?
Art education. So I did go with her help, and after almost 2 years of effort, I was admitted to college as a junior transfer student studying art education.
Mm-hmm. In Korea, mm-hmm. what university did you attend in the meantime?
Yeah, the Sungkyunkwan University. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Should I say it? It was my good fortune to meet my professor, Miss Agnes Adams, who was the director of student teaching at the National College of Education, now the National Louis University in Evanston, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to Korea with the American Education Mission to build an educational system, new educational system, I should say. So with her help, I was admitted to National College of Education as a junior transfer student,
mm-hmm.
Studying art education. Yeah.
And what drew you to art education? What drew you to art education? What drew you to art education?
What dreams?
What drew you to art education?
Of course, yeah. I was very interested in art, of course. But we know at the time we need immediate effort is try to rebuild the Korean educational system to provide a good education for other people. So I thought art education will help with my interest, what I have in mind, will help them students.
And when you came to the U.S., when you came to Illinois, did those plans change for you?
What do you mean, this change of children?
Oh, you said that you wanted to help rebuild the Korean educational system.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But since you didn't go back, did your plans change, or?
Yeah, the thing is, I was planning to go back to Korea after my master's degree,
mm-hmm.
which I did go to Columbia University to finish. Meanwhile, I met my husband, who also came to U.S.
My Harabaji, my grandfather.
Harabaji, because...
And what was his name?
Hassel.
Hassel.
Uh-huh. So he was a son of a Korean family that had fled to Japanese occupation of Korea prior to World War II. And he had grown up in Shanghai, towards the end of the war, he was swept up by Japanese expansion into China and sent to training camp for Japanese army. But fortunately, the war ended before he could be sent to fight.
Do you know anything about him before?
No. Before, he did go to a school, Korean school, in Shanghai, China. But they didn't have secondary school. So he had to go to Chinese secondary school. And then after war, his first, let me see, before could send to you, following Japanese army, let me see, he got a post-war job as a translator for U.S. Army occupation forces in Tokyo. By that time, he learned Korean, Chinese, and Japanese. So he did translate for U.S. Army.
Mm-hmm. Was he interested in coming to the U.S. or?
Well, he was. Yeah, he wanted to come to U.S. That came after he obtained his college degree in Tokyo. He came to U.S. He had a Penn State. He came as a graduate teaching with a teaching assistantship. After receiving his PhD, he was offered a teaching position in electrical engineering, and where he eventually became a full professor and then acting head of the electrical engineering department.
And how did you meet?
Through my mutual friend we had, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you know him before you came to the U.S.? Had you,
no.
Did not?
No way. He was growing up in China, mm-hmm. Shanghai, China. I was in Korea. I never been to China.
Right.
So that's the first time. In New York, I met him through my mutual friend.
And what did you think when you met him?
Huh?
What did you think when you met him?
Of course, I was impressed.
So when did you come to the United States?
That's United States, 1957.
January
1957.
Okay. And where did you come to the U.S. through?
Where?
Mm-hmm.
Evanston, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And so you came as a student?
Mm-hmm. National College of Education at the time. Mm-hmm. And they eventually changed the name, National Louis University.
National Louis University. Mm-hmm. Okay. And from Evanston, where did you end up moving to?
From Evanston, when I graduated from Louis University, National College of Education, whatever, I did move to New York, and my sister was up there also, younger sister. So we did two of us attending Columbia University, mm-hmm. pursuing our study. Yeah.
And
then at the time, I met my husband, and who was teaching at the Penn State. So I came here and enrolled as a graduate student at the Penn State. And then we decided to get married, of course. So we got married in 1960, I should say. We got married. So I continued my, education.
Mm-hmm.
But and then children came along. So when a second boy was on the way, of course, I realized I cannot do it. Now I have to wait for my study, and so I stayed home until third son was 9 months old, and then I gone back to my study. So I finished my degree in 1969. I got the MFA degree from Penn State in studio art.
And what was living in New York for the time like?
When?
What was it like living in New York?
Oh, that was a very exciting city, of course. I learned so much, of course. culture of this country, and they offered so much cultural, enrichment, so in art and music and the drama. So I was so happy, and then every opportunity I can get, I participate more than participate. I just took advantage of being there. Yeah.
And what was the most interesting thing that you encountered in New York?
Well, most interesting was opera, for instance. Opera, but being a student, we had a student ticket, but it was way up second balcony. The actor's size was one of my fingers, that far away. But still, music was, very clear. I could hear very well. And that was very exciting thing. And when I was in Evanston, still studying, and of course, Art Institute offered so much to cultural background too, of course. Chicago to New York, all those two cities offered a lot of interesting, artistic event. I was very excited about. Yeah.
What were kind of the most interesting cultural differences you noticed between here and Korea?
For instance, the little high school girl when back in Korea, of course, we never dreamed of, in my opinion, in the classes, say, express. And back in Korea, you never dare to say anything against what teacher says. But here, the little girl say, in my opinion, this is not so kind of a thing, so very free speech and those things, not only free speech, and every day, what's the right word anyway? So, freedom they got. That was very refreshing and shocking, of course. We never spoke against the teachers. That's our way of growing up in Asia. But here, you can express whatever you think of your subject or study or whatever.
And so, was society a little bit more rigid back in Korea?
Very restricted, and then you cannot easily go against what teachers telling you. Yeah.
And did that apply to the same way with, say, political structure or family structure?
Family?
Was the same case with the teachers, the same thing with
life, same thing, of course. You never say against your elders. You have to, whether you think it's right or wrong, you have to agree with them, of course, and then later you may change your mind, but still, so that's the way it was with the elders. You never express your opinion.
In regards to your three sons, did you raise them up kind of under more traditional Korean norms or sort of more in the U.S. freer way?
I said, well, in half and half probably. They have to learn how to respect the elders. That's still same as I was when I was growing up. Yet, it's they can express, or they have some freedom. They can express if they don't agree with them, with them, with the elders, they can explain why. But which is back home, they never had such chance to say against their opinion.
So tell us a little bit about your three sons.
Oh, three sons. Well, they were very, I must say they are all good threesomes. They, of course, never against parents' opinion or whatever, but they were always, they were known as a very good sons and students. So I don't think I had any particular hardship with as a parent. Yeah. So we, well, if we don't agree each other, then we talk it over and then solve it, no problem. Yeah.
And their, what are their names?
Kyu Wong, the first one, the Kyu Ho, and Kyu Tae, the third one, youngest one. So we, our custom is that their generation has to carry one of the two name they have to follow. Their generation, not only you, but their cousins and so forth. So for instance, Q is the one their generations has to follow. So Q and they choose one, other letter. So there's a Q Wong, and the second one also Q, and Q Ho, and then third one, Q Tae, yeah. But their cousins carry same Q, yeah.
And does the phrase Q and then the letter, does that hold a specific significant meaning, or?
Yes, it's a significant meaning is actually is a distinguished, that's a Q, yeah. Q means distinguished, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what does Q Wong, Q Ho, and Q Tae mean?
Well, Q Wong is a, actually it's like a heroic, so very smart, heroic person. Q Ho also, same smart, and the Ho means more courageous and so forth, like a general Inami kind of a, yeah, strong person. And the Q-tae, again, it's a very distinguished and smart man. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, Hasu, when he was living in the U.S., mm-hmm. did he have any interesting experiences that he told you about?
Interesting experiences. Well, he told me when he was growing up back in Shanghai, the episode is this, they were all Boy Scout members, and so some of the fellows went to buy some supplies for camping, and then they ran into roadside vendor who was selling potatoes, you know. And then they were trying to buy some bushels of potatoes, and then this farmer realized these boys from city, they wouldn't know anything. They must be thought he can really make a money out of them, but these smart boys took the old rotten ones out and then said, how much is this rotten potatoes will cost us? And so, oh, that's about $500, for instance, 500 yen, I should say. And then for the other one is then, it's a 400 something yen. And so anyway, they took the rotten one. If it is this much, we can subtract that one. They are cheaper with the, they took all these good potatoes.
So you said that you both came to State College for Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
I heard from my dad that you and Hasup had kind of worked with the students, the Korean students. Is that the case?
Work with the Korean students or just anything academic thing? It's just some holidays or picnic once in a while kind of thing. Yeah. Or on some weekends, sometimes we had a ping pong table in the basement. On every Friday after school, some of them came over to my house and they played ping pong and they doubles or singles and whatnot. But so happened that Harabaji, my husband, was a good player. And at one time, they had some competition between Chinese students and Korean students competition, ping pong competition. And then when Harabaji was playing against this Chinese boy, another audience said in Chinese, of course, "Hey, yeah, this guy's left side is weak. Why don't you, you know, send the balls to left side, attack left side?" But fortunately, Abuji, I mean my husband knew Chinese, of course, so he defended all, knew where the ball is coming. So balls. So he won, you know, because he understood what their, advice was. Anyway, afterwards, these Chinese students found out Harabaji was from China.
Did they feel a little bit cheated?
Well, it's not cheating. There's no, it's their fault, mm-hmm. assuming that this guy doesn't understand Chinese. Mm-hmm. But you never can assume that, of course. But Abuji said nothing he heard, so he just defended left side. Yeah, so he won. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The language difference, of course.
And what drew the students to you and Harabaji?
What
drew the students to you and Harabaji?
What?
What drew the students to you and Harabaji? Did you know them from somewhere? Or?
No. Some of them, of course, just came from Korea without previous knowledge. No, they came here, of course, and then we realized that we are from same country, and then they pay a visit sometimes, come to our house and so forth. So that was the, not necessarily same department, not too many students coming from Korea at the time. So we got very close relationship with the students, yeah.
And so what would you say were some of the interesting parts of adapting to U.S. life?
Interesting. Well, this all we realized is state college is very peaceful, and then low crime, university town. So we like to raise our children, make a home here, so that our boys were safe from the outside disturbances, so forth. So we loved this place. For instance, when I was studying in New York, and then Harabaji studied Tokyo, and so forth. Even before that, Shanghai, a big city, always have this crime. Not only drugs or like these days, but crime rate is higher there, big cities. So this compared to that, this, for instance, you never locked your apartment or car. Though I was so shocked that we leave the apartment door opened, and then open means didn't lock, I should say. We did go out, so I asked my, husband, is it okay without locking the door? I mean, without lock up this place. So, such a difference. No one came into robbed my apartment kind of thing. Anyway, such a difference with the, and then where I lived in Riverside Drive, in apartment when I was going to school in Columbia. And we had three locks, not only one lock when we go out and so forth. So big city, not only, Korea or Shanghai, even New York, this country, is compared to state college, you have to be really careful. But here was so relaxing. With a low crime rate, as I said, and then very trustworthy people around you. Most of them were working for university, so it's very, very trusted each other and so forth. So that's the difference we had. Yeah.
And when you came to State College, did you find, how big was the Korean community here? Was it sort
very
of...
small.
Very small.
Mm-hmm. Some couple of faculty members at the time. Of course, when Harabuji was studying, there wasn't any faculty member Korean. And then one gentleman came from Germany, so he worked for university research lab. He had a PhD from Germany, so he's the one. And then rest of it, all of them were graduate students from Korea. Yeah, Harabuji case, he's from China, of course, but through Japan, he was for a while studying it in Japan, of course. So got the degree from Japanese university for undergraduate degrees, yeah. And came here, as I said, as a graduate assistant to teach electrical engineering. Yeah.
And after you completed your graduate studies, what did you end up doing? What did you do after your graduate studies?
Oh, of course, as I said, I had to stay home. Then I did finally got my degree, final degree. But I started working at the art museum, Palmer Museum of Art, part-time, until my children were old enough to, I can leave them, or they left home for college and so forth. Then I started a part-time working for museum. And then after several years, I became registrar myself. So that's what I did, my job at the Palmer Museum of Art, registrar of exhibitions. That was my job.
And so you managed exhibitions or recorded them?
That too. I did a curated show, some of them too, and then took care of our permanent collections. Whatever art piece comes into the building or goes out building, they have to go through my office. All the record has to be kept.
Were there any interesting pieces, like things that were incredible that came through that you remember?
Well, we had some interesting episode I had, because I was the registrar and then we were organizing show, which means we have to borrow some of the pieces from other museums, like let's say Kansas City or Florida, something like that. And then one time they didn't want it to send this by mail or put this piece, so courier had to carry himself. So you had one from Kansas, and then she, of course, I arranged everything and then bought a ticket, airplane ticket and so forth. And then this piece, the Monstrance, which is a very important old one piece, and they don't normally send by a courier, but what I mean is a postal service. They have to carry the in person. So I just, her airplane ticket I sent, and then of course she asked for another ticket for this piece we are borrowing, because she didn't want it to put in a compartment. She had one passenger seat with, seatbelt on or whatever. That was an interesting experience we had.
And what was the piece of?
It's an old monstrance, what do you call it? It's a for church.
Oh, the monstrance?
Mm-hmm. Monstrance, yeah, church. Old monstrance.
Okay. So in my research about Koreans coming to the U.S.,
uh-huh.
One thing I found that was interesting was that a lot of them went to the D.C. metro area. Have you been there before?
D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
Washington, D.C.? not before, not I came to, of course, by plane, I came to Seattle, then from Seattle to Evanston, Illinois. But I haven't had a chance to see other parts of the country yet at the time. So D.C. way later, I did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you went to D.C., like when did you go, roughly speaking?
I don't quite remember what year I did go, yeah.
Okay. One interesting thing that was, we in our topics of discussion, we were kind of curious to know about how those who came to the U.S. felt they were perceived differently here than in Korea. Did you experience that?
Of course, a lot of things is different. Language to start with, language and the food and custom, everything is different, of course, yeah. We heard about it, we learned about it as much as I could, but still, I had so many things I had to adjust and learn, yeah.
I should phrase this one better. What I meant was, did you feel that Americans understood you or perceived you differently than those in Korea did when you lived there?
The distinction between them.
So you felt you didn't really feel like people saw you differently?
Of course, yeah. Of course they were. To start with, language difficulties. I thought that I knew English pretty well because I would try to prepare this. But still, we, in so many ways, it's all gone now. Okay, yeah. Anyway, slang, I couldn't understand. Blow your head off, I couldn't understand. All these things, for instance. And yes and no, that's another confusion I had. And when don't you have this, and you have to say yes or no, you know, those three negative question with a negative answer, that that was a very difficult to get to accustomed to how to answer it. That was difficult. And then we didn't have the sound of TH, for instance, th and kind of thing. And then R and L, this distinction was very difficult. There's so many things, of course, very difficult to follow. As I said, the slang is another thing they couldn't follow, you know, right away. So it took time to understand.
Is there any other reason that you settled in State College, that you like this place, or is there something else about it?
Well, you know, when my husband got his degree in electrical engineering. At the time, engineers were very popular, so many industry wanted to have them, scout them, to offer more salary and so forth. But big city, if you go, you get more money, but you spend more money. And then he from Shanghai, I from Seoul, Korea, or both of us was a city person, you know. And then we know how the city life is, of course. This place so peaceful, yet academically very challenging enough because we have a university here. So we thought that this is the ideal place to raise children. That's why we stayed against high, good offer. We just stuck to this. We stayed in State College, yeah, because of children's education.
And the low crime rate. If you had considered moving to an urban city, what city would you have moved to?
Well, it's a tough question because I love New York most, of course, because that such a rich cultural things they can offer. And, but it's not for good for living there. You love to visit and then take advantage of it, but living is a little difficult, I understand, of course. So I just wanted to hear, even if we want to go, we can. It's not impossible to visit there. So it's good thing is we stay here in a peaceful surroundings and good educations they can get. That's why we decided to stay at State College, smaller town, but university town. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before you came here to the U.S., what was your sort of perception of it?
Oh, perception of this country, mm-hmm. Yes. But sometimes very, it's general. Now, I didn't think of it, but all we were picturing is Hollywood. All we saw is those beautiful ladies, whatever, that is America, and such a rich country, that's all we heard about it, of course. So we haven't been here, so we have no idea, but through those communications, whatever, the media, we learned about this country, how rich it is, and how like a dream country kind of thing, that kind of perception we had. But as you know, where the people are living is almost the same. With a big, rich country or poor country, and to a certain degree they are all the same. But certainly, America is one of the more comfortable middle class. A lot of people, middle class people here, which is very comfortable and. Financially and in so many ways, this is the best country I thought of. Yeah.
And was it shocking when you got here, sort of the differences between how, the limited perception that you could have? Mm-hmm. Was it shocking when you got here?
Mm-hmm. Well, sort of, as I said, world is getting smaller and then you have all this communication and the reporting and you available, so I understood most of them before I came here. Mm. How it is still, there's very generous people here, and then such an abundance of materials available here, and so it was so very comfortable to live. That of course we knew. We heard about it, but I witnessed it when I came here. Yeah.
So it kind of matched some of your expectations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you came to the U.S. by plane?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. Do you have any other places in the U.S. you'd like to visit?
To visit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when I retired from university, I did a travel all over the world. So only thing maybe I was thinking was to go to Saudi Arabia or Dubai, for instance. Yeah, the rich country, they can have all this, the best of the whatever in the world. I was curious about it, so Arab people, so like the way of thinking, way of their living, of course, I was curious. So, but as I said, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Far East, Middle East, I've been there always after I retired from my job. That was my purpose. I see the world. That's what I did. Yeah.
And what states did you travel to here in the U.S.?
Here in U.S., East, West, everywhere, actually. West, because My oldest son was working at the Silicon Valley, so thanks to him, because of, you know, we did go, I did go see most of the California, Pacific side of the ocean, and then of course, Kyuho, so many years spent in Boston, so I saw that, the Atlantic Ocean and all that side of a town. For instance, Boston has Boston Museum of Fine Art in Boston, and then a lot of cultural things they offer, and then of course they went to Johns Hopkins, of course, so they've been to some Maryland, of course, I did go see, of course, Washington, of the later, of course, I did go to Washington too, and then was Florida and southern states, Tennessee, I go see. Well, and then of course Grand Canyon, all that place I have been, Alaska I did see, and well, as I said, quite a few states I saw, traveled and saw.
Do you have any favorite places you've visited?
Favorite place?
Mm-hmm. Here in the U.S. or abroad?
Mm-hmm. U.S. of course, Boston I liked, of course San Francisco I liked, but Chicago I liked. So most of them really I liked very much here.
And what was most interesting about the places that you visited?
Whatever they offer culturally, I was interested in. More than historical facts, but more cultural side of it, I was interested in. Yeah.
And did you have any favorite art museums you visited? Did you have any favorite art museums you visited?
Oh, of course I have. Too many of them. Metropolitan for one, yeah, at the world-class museum. And so other than that, Frio Gallery and Museum of Modern Art and American Art, Whitney Museum of American Art. All these museums in New York, I saw it, yeah. I was for a while in New York, so I had a chance to see all, most of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What struck you as interesting throughout your time here in the U.S.? Anything else besides the culture or the language or anything that struck you as really interesting?
What's interesting?
Mm-hmm. Aside from some of the earlier stuff we mentioned, like the freedom to speak or
mm-hmm.
or less rigid structure, so to speak.
Well, everything I saw was interesting anyway. Well, a lot of dams, like a Hoover Dam and all that, amazing things. You have so many wonderful, Colorado River and so forth, yeah, all the power plants and so forth. So there's so many things that I cannot just tell you in one word, but a lot of places are very impressive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the gambling. I did go to, where is that? Yeah. Gambling place.
Las Vegas,
yeah. Because Kyu Wong thought, I should see once at least in a lifetime, you should see the Las Vegas. So, which I did. It was interesting, of course, yeah. So, I bought $20 worth of chips and I played what do you call that, the slot machine. Of course I lost everything. After that, no thank you, no, not anymore.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to win at those.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Did you have any other interesting occupations or hobbies?
However, I did play tennis a lot, tennis for many, many years. After that, I played some golf and so forth. But that was very, well, first of all, why tennis? Because when children were young, I couldn't go out. I mean, no time to go out to do anything else. But after dinner, I needed some exercise, so joined the parks and recreation program. Father could stay with the children for a couple of hours or something. That's how I started with playing tennis. So that was physically, mentally, well, also health. Yeah.
And you also, I know, do some art pieces. Mm-hmm. So what were your favorite art styles to do?
Well, first of all, my most amazing experience I had is, you know, standing in front of a masterpiece work, also piece of art, either US or other countries. That was my most exciting experiences. And doing myself is, of course, I did painting, the pottery, and why pottery? Because Korea doesn't offer too much any culturally speaking to world. Only the Korean ceramics like celadon and then whiteware. There was big contribution to the history of ceramics because celadon, they had of course celadon glaze. Grayish green celadon glaze, of course, from in Song Dynasty in China started. They already had it, but underneath of this celadon glaze is a translucent glaze, so it's hard to have any design underneath. So what Korea did was, when it's a little harder stage, they carved out lines, whatever the design they use it. And then they used not the color, like for instance, cobalt or whatever, and oxides and so forth. They design they carved out when they were little harder stage, and they filled with the different color clay, like a white and a black with the black oxides and then red oxides for red and so forth. So especially all those celadon ware has a decoration of black and white, like a crane and the cranes decoration with the stylized cloud kind of thing, then carved out, and as I said, filled with this different colored clay, and then they scraped off excess clay, and then let it dry a little hard, and then when it's completely dried, they, of course, baked with what they call bisque dry, kiln, I should say. They have to cook it there. And then, they, of course, when it's cooled off, they take it out. And then you use glaze, put on a glaze on the piece, and then put it again in a higher temperature, 23,000 degree Fahrenheit kind of. They have to jack up the heat so that they can fuse this silica, which is in the glaze, of course. Even then, those kind of thing, because of that runny glaze, if you couldn't use any design underneath, now it was underneath, it's a different color clay was embedded. So it won't move or it won't disappear or not disturb. It's like that piece, the green, how can I explain this? Anyway, I could have more prepared to talk to you. Yeah. Anyway, so it won't, you don't lose your design because of the clay, not the color. Not like you know, cobalt clay design, then they will may disappear. But with cobalt blue is not so good idea for decoration because it's going to be a glaze is going to be green color, you know, gray green, whatever. That's what celadon means anyway. So those kind of thing. How we started this anyway. So I was get interested since we have the so in the history of pottery, that's the Korean unique invention to carve out and then fill with a different clay and then glaze it. That's our own invention. So that's nobody else did that. We invented that. So credit comes to Korea.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us before we finish?
I cannot think of it now. Yeah, I didn't prepare for that.
You did a great job.
Oh, wow, no. I don't know. Anyway, thanks. But